Good afternoon, brethren. Been thinking about this for quite a while, and the holy days coming up, I thought this God's way of management. A recent article in the business section of a Milwaukee newspaper caught my eye. It was advice for sales managers, and since I'd been once in my formal life, I had to read it. Now, there are a lot of examples of managers in the Bible, bad ones, like those who didn't do their jobs because the master is away, and great ones, like Joseph, who became the second most powerful man in the world. There are many kinds of managers, in business and corporations, and the qualities of a sales manager possesses are the same qualities that make all good managers. I attended many training programs and seminars in managing people, and I thought this article was very good. New sales managers are usually sales representatives who earn the promotions, but problems can arise because great salespeople don't always make great managers. This is true in any profession. Think about baseball. The great hitters don't automatically become great coaches, or managers. The game came easily for them, and they don't understand why everybody can't hit the ball out of the ballpark. Different positions require different skills. The baseball player may be a natural who doesn't really know how he does it. The baseball manager has to know how it's done and how to train all the players to do it. He needs to understand that every person he trains is going to be different and needs to be trained accordingly. The same goes for every manager. The good news is this article tells us that management skills can be learned. If you're wondering why I'm speaking about business management, think about the parable of talents. Each person started out with money. Those who managed the money well just didn't sit on it. They were promoted to rule over cities. That's management. Everyone here ever been in charge of a city? Having been a sales manager, I know it can be a very rewarding or a very difficult job. Salespeople want to do things their way, and they are usually very competitive. Many people I was responsible for were out on the road, and I didn't see them every day, which added to the difficulty. Probably every one of us has had some management experience in our past, even though manager wasn't your title. Did you raise children? Were you responsible for a family member or train someone at work? There are all kinds of things that require management skills. From managing your money to managing yourself. Most people think a sales manager is the boss. But the requirements for effective management in this article were all about managing yourself, something we must learn to do if we expect to be rulers and managers in God's kingdom. Recommendation number one. This article says to be successful, you first must leave your ego behind. Then ask yourself, how do I approach my work? How do I feel about it? This is exactly what God has asked us to do. Our work is to love God and love the brethren. In the kingdom, we will be teaching others how to do that. The love that we have, the enthusiasm that we have for God's way, will help us develop a new attitude in the people we teach. Our attitude of love, of care, and concern is why people will trust and learn from us. Recommendation number two. Adapt your behavior. Every person is unique. The way a person interacts with others, the way they analyze things, make decisions. Their personality is unique. Each of us has different strengths and weaknesses. A good sales manager will recognize and appreciate their differences. We should be ready to do this because God has chosen very different people, put them together in a church, and told us to love one another and to accept one another as family. Even in our old families, we don't treat everyone the same. Children will make a big fuss if they think their brother or sister got more attention. But they all don't want the same things. Sometimes differences in family members can be quite surprising. In the church, I've been surprised at how similar we are. Even so, as members of the body of Christ, we learn to accept and sometimes overlook our differences and adapt our behavior to be a useful part of the church. Our goal in the kingdom will be to help people become part of this body. To do that, we will need to appreciate their uniqueness and adapt our behavior to give them the understanding that they will need. Let's turn to 1 Corinthians chapter 9. Paul many times adapted to different behaviors than others. He often made himself subordinate to the needs of others to do the work. In 1 Corinthians 9:19-23, Paul says, "Although I am free from everyone's expectations, I have made myself a servant to all of them to win more people. To the Jews, I become like a Jew in order to win the Jews. To those under the law, I became a man under the law in order to win those under the law, although I myself am not under the law. To those who do not have the law, I become a man who does not have the law in order to win those who do not have the law. However, I am not free from God's law, but subject to the Messiah's law. To the weak, I become weak in order to win the weak. I become all things to all people, so that by all possible means I might save some of them. To do all this for the sake of the gospel, in order to have a share in its blessings." Paul was able to manage himself in such a way that even though he adapted his behavior for the advance of the gospel, he never compromised himself to the point of being in violation of God's law. He was a blessing to all those that God sent his way. Moving to recommendation number 3. Acknowledge your limitations. The point is to remind sales managers they don't have all the answers, and they should encourage their reps to offer their ideas. In the kingdom, will we have all the answers? I know we have some of the answers we need. We don't know if there will be things that have not been revealed as yet. What is the future beyond Revelation 22, for example? I know we will still be unique individuals because that is the way God made us. So we might work better with some people than others. All the apostles had to adapt themselves to others, but they knew their limitations. Paul was given a special gift to take his message to the Gentiles. Peter to the Jews. My wife has a story from her days of teaching with kids who were expelled and timeouts or put out of school. She overheard a discussion with another teacher that had with a student about whether a snowman should wear shoes or not. The teacher and the 5-year-old, yes, sometimes students were that age, were drawing pictures of a snowman. The teacher put his shoes on his snowman, but the student said, "Snowmen shouldn't have shoes." After a few minutes of disagreement, the teacher asked why snowmen shouldn't have shoes. The student answered, "Because snowmen don't have feet." The teacher said, "You're right." Now, any teacher would have been all right with this little boy, but none of them would have given the same kind of attention and understanding that this man could. A great thing about this program was that each student was given to a teacher who best fitted his need. Recommendation number 4, delegate responsibility. Delegating responsibility gives your team members ownership and facilitates their personal growth. Did your parents ever allow you to do things they really didn't think you were ready for? Jesus did his disciples. For example, Jesus was exhausted in teaching one day, so he got in a boat and told his disciples to sail the other side of the Sea of Galilee. Being exhausted, he took a nap. And as they were crossing, a storm came up. Now it must have been quite a storm. These brave, experienced fishermen became terrified. They were amazed when Jesus calmed the storm down. There was a time when Jesus fed 5,000 people. But later, when they had 4,000 when the apostles had 4,000 who were hungry, they wondered, what are we going to do? Yet they all wanted the top job. Second in command, Jesus asked them if they were ready. Can you drink the cup I'm about to drink? Yet he was always delegating authority to them. It's the best way to teach. If we learn by succeeding, we can also learn by failing. Some parents are really good at understanding that. My dad was a manager at one of the factories here in Beloit. I remember his employees telling me, "You got to grow up to be like your dad." One day he told me to park our riding lawnmower in the garage after he finished mowing. I was always pleading with him to let me park it. He told me someday he would. The day had arrived. I wanted to show him my driving ability. I got on the mower and promptly crashed it into the center post of the garage. Now, I thought I was really in for it. But Dad, with a smile on his face, patted me on the back and told me how good a job I did steering away from the car. The fifth recommendation is, be a resource. You must be available to listen, answer questions, and provide answers or guidance when needed. You must really pay attention. I don't think anyone here expects their job in the kingdom will excuse me. I don't think anyone here expects their job in the kingdom will be to give out marching orders and watch everybody jump up to obey. That isn't God's way of doing things. Jesus was frustrated by people who didn't get it. Even his own disciples sometimes, "Oh, you of little faith." And they sometimes knew they weren't getting it, but they saw his love for them and experienced his patience. How much do I still not get? How many things are we still trying to overcome? Remembering this should help us get the right kind of guidance and have the patience we need so we can be a resource to God, who God sends our way. The last recommendation, number 6, is follow up. Give timely feedback. In Spokesman's Club, we learned how to speak, how to give feedback. Good speakers want to have feedback. They want follow up on how they did and how they can do better. They want follow up on what people are thinking. They don't want to just hear what's going wrong all the time, though. Speakers need to improve on things like that. But if all a speaker gets is what he did wrong, that can be pretty discouraging. Yes, we need to know where we can improve. But if we don't receive credit for what we do is right, we won't gain confidence. Some of the guys were great speakers. It was their gift. Some of us really struggled. Even the worst speaker in the room, the guy who lost his place, forgot his speech, spoke too softly, mumbled, deserved credit. He deserved credit for just giving up there and standing behind a podium. I'm not the best speaker in the room. I don't expect I will ever be. And it's even gotten more difficult since I had cancer in my mouth. I have quite a time sometimes making my tongue work. Some days it just doesn't want to come out at all. All of you have been very kind and patient with me, and I thank you for that. Your feedback means so much. The Bible tells us to encourage one another. Encouragement is feedback. It is the type of follow-up that lets people know you're paying attention. It is the type of follow-up that lets people know you care about them. If we practice it now, we should all get really good at it. Now, these are all recommendations, and good ones, all of them. And after just discussing them with you, I have a question. Are you management material? Manager, have you ever thought of yourself as your calling in such a way? All of us, I'm sure, have heard the word steward. The Bible tells us that we are to be good stewards. But as a matter of fact, we don't use the word steward much in modern day conversation. We are, however, much more familiar with the words manager or management. So I looked up the definition of the word stewardship in the dictionary. Stewardship, carefully and responsibly managing someone or something entrusted in your care. Then by definition, good stewardship is good management. I like Yogi Berra's famous quote, "If you don't know where you're going, you'll wind up somewhere else." Let's turn to Luke 12:41. Let's look at what our master has to say. Peter asked, "Lord, are you telling this parable just for us or for everyone?" The Lord said, "Who then is the faithful and careful servant manager whom his master will put in charge and giving his all his other servants their share of food at the right time? How blessed is that servant whom his master finds doing this when he comes. I tell you with all certainty, he will put him in charge of all his property. But if the servant says to himself, 'My master has taken a long time to come back,' and begins to beat the other servants to eat and drink and get drunk, the master of that servant will come on a day when he doesn't expect him and an hour he doesn't know. Then his master will punish him severely and assign him to a place with unfaithful people." The neglectful steward will wind up somewhere else. God put men in the Garden of Eden to cultivate it, to keep it, Genesis 2:15. We have the privilege and the responsibility to be partners with God in managing his vast creation. We know why we are to manage the people and the cities God as Christ assigns to us on his return. But let's think way beyond that if we can for a minute. Consider how big the universe is, if you can. Can you even imagine what our responsibilities are going to be? The point of Luke 12 story is that Jesus says, if you can manage yourself, you'll find yourself, if you can't manage yourself, you will find yourself somewhere else. In other words, not in management. What resource has God asked you to manage? The most precious resource He has assigned us to manage is ourselves. Have you ever thought of yourself as God's asset? By admitting that we ourselves, as well as all that we have, belongs to God, doesn't limit our importance, but instead should give us a sense of our significance in God's plan. The bad news is that too often we are prone to believe we ourselves, and by our own great minds, we build up our assets. We set our own rules and how we should use these things. The world around us draws us in. But Jesus says the good news is, when I come, I'm bringing the kingdom of God with me. That means He will be the ruler and we will be His managers, managing His property, all of His property that we share. God's agenda in building His kingdom not only involves our abilities, knowledge, and skills that He is gifted with, but also the work we have done in managing ourselves. Simply put, everything that we are, mind and body, is a resource that we must manage for God. No false humility here. You and I are an important member in God's management team. Management can seem daunting, but we remember God promises us that He will never require something of us that we can't accomplish. All of us who have been called are able to master God's management skills. Remember what they are. Analyze your attitude. Adapt your behavior. Acknowledge your limitations. Delegate responsibility. Be a resource. And last, follow up. How about that? Nothing new here. Nothing that we've done in various situations in our home, on the job, or here at the church. The first three are all about our own behavior, our servant attitude. We have to get that right first. The last three are about how we treat others. It's about how we help. It's about how we help them to take the responsibility with a caring attitude we all are to have. I look back at my years in management and remember it was no easy job. I thought about the last time, about the time I had a department that was 99% women, 95% women, I'm sorry. Then later I retired and managed a dozen little preschoolers on a little yellow bus. I have to say, there was a lot of frustration on my part. God certainly gave me excellent training. Jesus told us in Luke 16:10, whoever can be trusted with a little can be trusted with much. We can't be irresponsible with what God has given us, both physically and mentally. We can't hold on to what we have. God expects us to grow. For example, let's turn to Exodus chapter 3. God knew that Moses had much more to give, but Moses had other thoughts. He thought himself a has-been. He had gone from crown prince of Egypt to the backstage and nowhere, chasing sheep for his father-in-law. The world had drawn him in. He was comfortable. He was 80. Then God shows up, Moses, you still have work to do. That was to lead his people out of Egypt. So what's the first thing Moses does? God, you're making the wrong choice in me. This man chosen by God to be a great leader starts making excuses. Now I'm sure as a possible crown prince of Egypt, Moses himself had heard just about all the excuses Everyone can have, but can't get something done. But here he is making excuses to the great God. He grew up in Pharaoh's house, an important man, managing Pharaoh's interests. But that was a long time ago. I'm getting on in years. God needs somebody younger for the task, he thinks. So he's a little shaken. Excuse number one. Who am I? I'm 40 years removed from Egypt. Nobody knows who I am anymore. I always thought that was a little funny. He knew God knew who he was. Just as he does you, and just as I know, he knows who I am. But Moses by this time had settled for second best. His life wasn't bad. He had a good wife, children. He was managing his father's law sheep, and he was good at it. Right now he couldn't see anything about his life that would make him a man to lead people out of Egypt, his people out of Egypt. But it was in God's plan for Moses to do it. Excuse number two, I'm ignorant. Some people feel that Moses was lying to God. But the more I read this, I feel he's being honest with God. Will Rogers said, everyone is ignorant, only on different subjects. Moses thought he didn't know enough God to be his messenger. Thought his people wouldn't believe him. Exodus 3:13. Who will I say sent me, he says. God says, Exodus 3:14. I am who I am. Tell the people I am has sent you. Excuse number three, I might fail. We've all here done this or been here in the past, haven't we? I might fail. Exodus 4:1 through 5. In all fairness, Moses had reason to be reluctant. He had one time before tried to make his people believe. Failure can cause us to quit. Moses didn't think he could succeed. But God, with God on his side, versus Pharaoh and his people who have been enslaved for hundreds of years, there's an altogether different outcome. Excuse number four. I don't have the talent. Chapter 4, 10 and 11. When all else fails, when all else fails, this is where insecure people go. Moses says, I don't have the eloquence of speech. I stutter. I speak too slowly. Moses was looking at his weaknesses. God knew he was just making excuses. God tells Moses, I made your mouth. I'll make it work. Finally, Moses says to God, send someone else. Exodus 4:13. He feared the task God was asking him to do. He was prone to anger. He was a murderer like the Apostle Paul. He sometimes doubted God and on occasion brought glory on himself. Moses knew his limitation. He was a man of flaws, the kind of flaws we all have. But God had answered all his excuses. I'll send your brother to speak for you. Moses knew God had it with his excuses. He finally realized he had to get past the negative feelings about himself and put his faith in God. Someone once said, if you want to be successful in life, find the direction as God is going and go with him. We were all called to do a work. We accepted. We were called to be God's messengers and to become his managers. If we think we can't do it, we aren't trusting God. He will put us in some other place and call others for the position. Moses could have wound up somewhere else, tending sheep. God is telling his management team today, learn to manage my way. Analyze your attitude. Adapt your behavior. Acknowledge your limitations. Delegate responsibility. Train others, and then be their resource. Follow up on yourself and the needs of others. God says, I am who I am. I will do the best that I can for my people. I have a job for you. I will be you. I will be with you, was God's message to Moses. It is God's message to us today.